What's up, everyone? Welcome to the second episode of the Buckets and Banter podcast. I am your host, George Marshall, here with my co-host, Jeffrey Delano Frederico
They're
Bendel.
getting worse.
It's only going to get worse. But we want to start this episode a little bit differently than we have previously. And I know that there have only been two episodes, so you can just imagine how this will be different automatically. But first of all, thanks to everyone who chose to listen and tuned in to episode number one. It was really just a quick post on Twitter and Instagram, and to see the level of support was pretty amazing and unexpected. As of today, which is just under 48 hours removed from releasing episode one, we have nearly 200 views, 9 subscribers, dozens and dozens of interactions. And as you heard me saying, like, I would have been totally content with 7 people viewing this. Now I am sure that 95% of those views are probably Ann Marshall, my mother. And the other 5% is probably either Jeff or Jeff's mom. But for those of you who have tuned in, we really appreciate the support and feedback. And I know that Jeff, I'm sure that you are equally as excited as I am after episode number one.
Yeah, definitely. I think you said it best. We kind of expected just, kind of our friends, the people we know, maybe a couple parents here and there just kind of tuning in. But it seemed like we had a quite a nice start for our first episode, and definitely want to thank everybody for listening, and hopefully we can continue to improve and provide something better each week.
Yeah, I know that you'll talk about that part in a second. To the viewers and the listeners, just know that even though Jeff has chosen to have a massive upgrade in his Zoom setup, the production budget remains $0.
I
So
just moved to
we
a different
are,
room. I
yeah,
just moved to a
this
different
is
room.
not a major upgrade. You can still see my wife's degrees behind me. Oh, there's mine. But outside of that, the underaccomplished George Marshall and the dark room behind Jeff Bendel will be how we operate moving forward.
I still don't have any overhead lighting in this room, and my lamp supply is pretty limited right now. So we're rocking with the salt lamp right here beside me, and the screen is so bright that all the light is straight just strictly from the screen. So
I mean, IKEA, if you ever hear this, this is a perfect time to sponsor Buckets and Banter. This is the perfect time to do that.
why not?
Jeff will need a lamp at minimum. What we're going to do, which is new, so going back to the segments of the podcast, is we don't have the luxury of being able to like stop in the moment and see what is or isn't accurate. So a lot of what we have to do is just kind of rock and roll with what we've got. And then in the next episode, we'll address some of the misconceptions or some of the things that we wish we would have touched on before. Before we get into that, I'd love to hear, Jeff, just some of the things, because we've had, we're very blessed within the space that we're in to be connected to people who have made, great names and success for themselves in terms of the fields that they're in, whether it be coaching, playing, writing, scouting, whatever the case may be. And a lot of those people have given some pretty positive feedback, but also some things that they think would help take this to the next level. So can you share some of those that you've heard or that you've appreciated?
I mean, I don't want to get into too many specifics or name any names, but I feel like overall it's just been pretty positive, and people have just liked the general tone of the conversation, and kind of just that, it's two guys that are in the space just kind of talking about what they know and what they think. And I don't think anybody expected us to come out here and try to be something big, so we're kind of just winging it. And on the negative side, I think it's just on getting a feel for each other and just getting more of a comfortable with me personally, just learning to slow down and not rush when I talk. So just stuff like that, and keeping our energy up throughout the pod. So
Very cool. Very cool. I think that all of those reflections are great. For me, it's really more content related. So there are a few things that I want to touch on specific to the Charlotte Hornets segment from last episode. And what was remarkable about this, by the way, is that segment was so well received. Like, of all the segments we did, I did not like, I can't even tell you the number of friends who are just like, yeah, they suck. Like, you guys are 100% right. It was funny to
Well, and I want to
hear.
add before you say anything, some people might not have seen the comedic value in that, but
Right.
I felt like the comedy lies within just them being terrible.
No, 100%, 100%. Also, we're not pulling for them to be bad this year. We want them to be successful. Again, we celebrated their picks going into the next or from the past couple years. Let's hope that they make it out the right way this year. 25 and a half wins. I'm taking the over, not by much, but I'm taking it. So here's what we didn't mention in that segment. One of them is related to free agency, which I know that you're going to talk about in a second. One of them is a direct correction of mine that you would like me to own in front of our viewers now. And then the last one is like, it's so memorable from the mid-90s. We just completely forgot about it, which is so foolish. But the first one I'll start with is the Gordon Hayward signing, not mentioned at all. 4-year, $120 million contract from the Boston Celtics.
Right.
A insane cap hit for someone who could never get healthy. Now, Gordon Hayward is an all-star. Like, this is a dude. And when he was at his
Pre-injury.
correct. What I was going to say is pre-injury, he was really him. Like, he was an excellent, excellent player. But it's impossible to overlook the fact that it's $120 million over 4 years. Like, that's a substantial contract going from one team to another. So that one was really tough. Second one that I had to mention, I listed Taj Gibson as a reliable veteran, and you had some really negative takes when it came to that specific comment.
With all due respect, Taj Gibson, fine role player in his time. He's 40. He's 40
Correct.
years old. He's not LeBron.
Well,
Forty
if
year
that's our
olds
litmus
aren't
test,
playing.
that's an absurd litmus test to compare anyone to, by the way. But compared to their other veterans, whether it be Plumlee, whether it be
He's
Colin,
old.
right, he's substantially old. He's like the grandfather of that locker room. There's
He's
no
been
question
around
about
for
it.
sure. He's played on a lot of teams.
But how did we miss, like, those two pale in comparison to the next one?
Sure.
The trading of Kobe Bryant.
Right.
Like that, how do we not lead with that? Total mistake, total oversight by us. I own it all the way. Are there any others that you would add, or like, can you touch on any of these for a moment?
Yeah, just as you started talking about it, I remembered the we didn't mention that Charlotte drafted Frank Kaminsky over Devin Booker and Miles Bridges over SGA. So
Awesome. Love that.
we
Love
might
that
have
for their
mentioned
journey.
SGA, but either way.
You also challenged me on a little bit of the realistic draft picks within their range.
Sure,
So
the
for me,
contest.
right, like naming Giannis is not realistic in that moment. And
Sure.
you said that even Damian Lillard, to me, when you look back at that, I guess it's not that far-fetched from 6 to 2, but it's still, I think, at that point, a pretty distant six is what you're saying.
Yeah, I just remembering, excuse me, remembering back to the pre-draft stuff with him. It was, remember, he was from Weber State. He was a kind of an unknown product. The competition was a question mark. His play style was a question mark. It's not like Steph Curry had set the world on fire yet. So
Right.
that was kind of the thing with him. And then Giannis, even in that year, that was considered a reach potentially for him. I mean, he was a complete project that they just invested all their resources into. And
Right.
who's to say that if he had gone to Charlotte, that he would have ever even panned out? Because
Right,
again,
right, right,
they're
right.
kind of cursed. So.
I mean, all of those things are great. We really appreciate the feedback on that from the viewers and from our friends and from anyone else who our family members who didn't even know who the Hornets were. So, I mean, all in all, fantastic job. And we really appreciate that feedback a ton. But definitely we'll work hard in upcoming segments to continue to get things right and continue to have those types of conversations with full detail. The second part for me was the top five coaches. This is going to be pretty brief and just more of a challenge to the adults in the basketball space. We're just in such a negative time right now in terms of a few things. For one, we're in an everyone gets a trophy culture, and we're in a situation where, it's just very sensitive. I think that adults, meaning everyone, meaning parents, meaning coaches, meaning people, even in the media, everyone can be too sensitive at times. I'm guilty of it, no question. But the reality, guys, of that list was just to shed light on some things that were really positive. I'm not going to apologize for shouting out Irv, for shouting out Wit, for shouting out the people that I did. And I know Jeff is not going to apologize the same way. If we wanted to have a list of 150 great coaches in North Carolina, we could easily create that list. It's just that that would take the entire podcast. And sometimes we're going to make these lists. And today we're going to talk about NBA players on our list. My guess is that a talented pro is not going to suddenly listen to this and be like, man, they left me off. This sucks. Those guys are terrible. It's just one of those things where, in general, the basketball space is really sensitive right now. I could easily have shouted out Scottie Richardson from Crossroads. I could
Get
easily
out.
have shouted out Q Alston from SWA, Southern Wake Academy, could easily have shouted out Nick Jones from Ambassador, could easily have shouted out Josh Thompson from Bishop. There's so many guys that.
Mind you, we had to narrow the list down. Like all
Exactly.
these
That's
guys were
the thing.
on these
That's the
lists. Like
thing.
all
Right.
these guys we wanted to talk about, we had on our list, but ultimately
100%. It's just one of those things where we're never going to be able to create those perfect things. And no one has hit me up about this. I'm just saying that in general, sometimes vibes and energy can get, you can look too much at oh, well, that person was celebrated and I wasn't. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're still doing great things. When I see you, it's all good. You're a great coach. You're doing great things for kids. But, shout out to the coaches who did make the list and who we wanted to celebrate. And, moving forward, we're definitely going to have that on our radar. And touch on more things that come to the high school space. So it may not be coaches, it may be teams, it may be things that we're excited to see, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know if you have any final thoughts before we get into our content for the day.
no, other than I think we should start a shout out counter.
A what? Oh, for me?
Shout out counter for both of us even. But yeah, you especially.
Oh, Lord. I don't know. Well, you know why we can't do that?
Zero.
Production budget, $0.
Exactly.
I think you of all people probably appreciated my tweet earlier where I said, yes, we have to have the watermark from Office Clips
Yeah.
because we can't afford being able to pay for the pro account. It was so funny.
It's all
Made
right.
myself laugh with this one. All right, let's get into today's content. So a couple of things. For one, always going to start comedic. Two, then we're going to get into some sort of top 10, top five, or countdown. Three, then we're going to get into some hot topic that exists, and then we'll finish with our sound off. So for the comedy today, is going to be all about the messenger versus the message, and what people are attacking, whether it be on Twitter, whether it be in the media, whether it be feedback in general. Because one of the people that we're friends with in this space actually had, candidly, one of the more epic clapbacks that you could have because the messenger rather than the message was being attacked. And he really caught a stray because he wasn't even in the initial conversation whatsoever. But I leave it to you and digress to your stance on this.
I think we both know this guy, and I think most people watching this or listening to this will know who we're talking about. But Jamie Shaw was involved with just some funny Twitter situation this past weekend. Rod Edwards initially tweeted, why are people, people evaluating basketball who weren't high-level basketball players, which is, always a controversial topic that comes up from time to time, and people have varying opinions on it. I think we can delve into that a little later. But and then Wes Sancho quote tweets it and says, Jamie Shaw and Andrew Slater collect a check, and they probably couldn't hit two corner threes in a row. And I think he later clarified his overarching
Right.
point was
Yes.
that you don't have to be a high level player to still be a high level evaluator or still be paid or at a high level in the space or
Right.
be well respected or what have you. But that said, before that, I think that was even clarified. Jamie goes out and it later posts the timestamp too and goes and hits, three threes in a row with no cut in the camera. So it was just a fun exchange. And again, Sancho later, like, or was it within the replies commenting that, he was not against those guys. He was just saying, you can be a high level evaluator and you
Right.
don't have to, be a high level player.
I hate for him that that clarification is lost because it is so often lost. Giving an example from like just a recent podcast, you saw, have you seen this, like the controversy and the beef between Cam Newton and Ryan Clark?
Yeah, I mean a little bit of it. I've just been seeing the whole kind of Cam Newton, Jalen
With
Hurts dialogue,
related
and
to
that's silly
Jalen
to me.
Hurts. Yeah, like he's saying that Jalen Hurts is not a top 10 quarterback, and then he clarifies it by saying like, well, he's not able to showcase if he is top 10 because the Eagles are so freaking good. And like that point is valid. Like that candidly, like that is kind of a valid point. You don't think that that's a valid point, that
I
because of the
mean,
balance of his
yes and
offense?
no. It's not to, I mean, there've been 4,000 yard passers, 4,500 yard passers on great teams. So it's not on Super Bowl winning teams. So it's not to say that.
Well, he was a 2,900 yard passer, which I think.
Look at the receivers he has. I mean, that it's not like it's
No, but
impossible or.
that's his point. That's his point, is that like he's not even able to showcase his greatness because of how good the people are around him. And like, regardless of whether or not we disagree with that, the reality was that Ryan Clark came on ESPN, like the morning show, right? And start saying things directly about Cam Newton. And that's what made me really think of this point, is it's like when we're trying to make an argument, a debate, like let's focus on the original question. Let's not bring up names. Let's not do, like, we don't need to do all that. Like that is not a necessary part of this topic. What I feel is kind of lost within this is in the original question, if you didn't play high level, does that give you the right to scout high level? There's only a finite number of people who have played at the highest level of basketball. So, like, we're not just going to use that subsection of people to do all these. Like, to me, I think what's lost in this is that you have to do blank to be blank. And that to me is not accurate. What do you feel about that? Like, to me, that just seems odd to me, that stance.
No, I think we see this in all types of professions. It's not like we see it, you don't have to have broken bones to perform surgery. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like it applies in a lot of facets in life. I think a lot of expertise comes from just being around the game too, and just general knowledge of the game and being a high level player. I think that kind of is an interesting separator because a lot of those guys aren't high level coaches or high level evaluators themselves or high level anything. I mean, Michael Jordan, anything he touched died outside of when he played. He was terrible. He was
Right.
one of the worst general managers and owners in history of sports. So I just think it's something that it's an interesting dialogue, but again, it's something that comes up every few years. And it's not difficult to tell who knows what they're talking about and who knows about basketball and who's been around the game. So I think that's just kind of the overarching point for me for that.
Yeah, the level of kind of honesty, integrity, like within the space, it really transcends all professions, is what I should say. Like, well-respected people aren't necessarily all NBA players, and vice versa. And like, I'm here to tell you this right now, having seen it firsthand, there's some pros out there that coach, and I will coach circles around you. Like, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care where you played, how many rings you have, Hall of Fame, this, that, and that. I do not care. Like, I'm talking the ability to reach a team to be the best version of themselves with great execution, with great defensive intensity support. Like, I'm telling you, like, I'm not backing down from a pro because you played at the highest level of basketball. In fact, it actually wants me to outcoach you more.
Right.
And so to me, I think that it depends. Now, is it a little bit different in writing with media today? A little bit because it's so public, and everything is scrutinized and just different levels. But I don't know. I just think that it can be short-sighted to say, like, in this situation, this person has to have X, Y, and Z on their resume. Now, that being said, for certain topics, for certain experiences, I do think that your what the level is that you're at does matter.
Sure.
There's certain things within the locker room that just that matter. It's a different perspective. So I understand that 100%. And I think the frustration lies in the fact that rankings matter so much more now. They're so much more public, and people are like, yo, what is the deal with this? Why aren't they seeing this, this, and this? I don't know. I think that to me, it just goes back to do your thing and run your race, and we just move forward from there.
Yeah, I mean, like, kind of like you said, things are so public now. People want to have opinions, and people want to have opinions about opinions. So ultimately, it's just, especially now with things being, so many mixtapes and Twitter and social media
Sure.
in general, it's easy to get caught up in all of it.
No, I 100% agree. I hate that messages are lost when it is caught up. That's my thing, is like Jamie's response was hilarious and it was appropriate. But for Wes, like, I hate that what the way that he clarified it couldn't have even been heard, if that makes sense, right? And that's not fair to him either. So,
Hey, 200 people potentially could hear that.
Right. Yeah. At least they'll know what we know. That's perfect. Let's get into the next topic. So, moving right along into our countdown for the day. So, we're going a little bit down memory lane here. What I challenge Jeff with on this topic is, we want to create, or we created rather, a list of our 10 favorite NBA players during our lifetime. So literally the guys that, we would buy jerseys, we would rock out with, we would support, we'd draft on fantasy basketball, the whole nine. So I'm very excited to go through it. And I think the best way to do this, Jeff, is you just rattle off your fir the first five. Like, to me, I didn't rank mine. I just put them as like, these are my 10 dudes, and I have it in two lineups by position. That's the coach in me. For you, like, you just say the names, and then say, I'll say mine, and then we'll do a little comparison, and then we'll do the next five, and we'll go from there. This could be a disastrous way to do it, but it's a like we'll figure it out in the next couple minutes. No one's editing it anyway. Who cares?
Fair enough. All right. Yeah. So I'll start my list with Yao Ming.
Nice, nice.
It used to be the background on my computer. I've always had a fascination with Yao just because his career was cut short. He was more than just a giant. He was so skilled and actually nimble for how huge he was. And he transcended basketball in China and, kind of helped bridge the game over to America. But yeah. Fantastic rim protector, rebounder. He was big and strong, which is, a rarity with what you see in most, especially Chinese international Asian prospects. So, yeah, was my first guy. Any
Nice.
thoughts on Yao?
I'm going to wait for you to do your whole five and then I'll chime
Perfect.
in.
Number two, I would have Brandon Roy. We referred to him in the last podcast, one of
Dog.
my all-time favorites. Another guy, career cut short, but when he played, he was, like you said, arguably the second best shooting guard in the league, maybe just behind Kobe. So, amazing scorer, crafty with the ball. That Portland team that they were building with him and LaMarcus Aldridge, and if they would have drafted Kevin Durant instead of Greg Oden, what could have happened? What could have been? Just crazy thing. And then the playoff run that he had at the end when he had literally no cartilage in his knee
Right.
and less than DeJuan Blair even. So
Wow.
just a sad story, but Brandon Roy, incredible talent. Dwayne Wade would be my number three, who would
Nice.
probably also be one of my favorites as a young child. I remember he was one of my first guys that I kind of watched. I was very young, but I remember going and watching him kind of get drafted and go through. Everybody really loved LeBron and Kobe, and I just remember, and even Melo, but I remember Dwayne Wade was just so dynamic, incredible defensive guard, just an amazing athlete, both laterally and vertically, just incredible mid-range game. People call him a foul merchant now, looking back, but he was incredible. Pump fake is ridiculous, just all of that. So.
Have you ever heard of on Gilbert Arenas's podcast when he talks about Dwayne Wade being such a transformational two guard because he was the first person who could dunk off of a spin move or off of a Euro step?
He was front stepping on
It was like
guys.
you're 6'4", 220 pounds, and that's the way that you're approaching the game. Like you're not even shooting jump shots anymore.
And 6'4" honestly might have been generous.
Probably so. Probably so.
But for my fourth guy, I went with a very, very recent current player, Nikola Jokic.
Nice.
I don't understand how anybody could watch basketball and not just be entranced and fascinated by him and how he impacts the game. I understand he's slow and a fat guy and doesn't move great and he's not this explosive athlete, but I think that's what arguably makes him so unique and special is just he's arguably, in my opinion, the best passer to ever play the game, at least that I've ever seen. His feel is just ridiculous. He can score in any way now. A guy that goes and has a career shooting year after he's already mastered every other facet of the game. It's just,
Right.
it's comical. How do you guard a guy like that? My fifth guy rounding out this first five would be Tracy McGrady.
Nice.
What really needs to be said? Another guy, 6'8", bucket getter, 6'9". Had some of the most exciting highlights of my childhood, both at dunks, scoring at the what was it, 13 points in 30 seconds against the
Yep.
Spurs. One of the greatest moments in history. I just another guy who I think his career was riddled by injuries, but still was incredible when he played. And yeah.
So I share a few of yours on just that list.
Oh,
So I
boy.
only one per five. So five of my favorite players, if I was going to create like just a lineup that I absolutely love, guys that I rock with, at center, I'm going Hakeem. Like truly the best footwork maybe ever by a center. I think that the greatest foundational skill in today's players that does not exist is their footwork. I think that it is truly something that within the 90s and early 2000s, it was the foundational thing you had to have to be successful. And if you combine footwork with leverage, now you're talking about being a really, really unbelievably effective player. But Hakeem, obviously amazing. At power forward, I'm going Kevin Garnett. The passion, the intensity, like being unapologetically a dog. I'm here for all that. Like that to me is someone that I connected with just in terms of the way that they emotionally approach basketball. My small forward, I'm going Melo.
Nice.
The OG Melo, the real Melo.
Cornrows mellow.
Listen, when he was drafted by the Nuggets, for one, I am a firm believer that he should have been at least co-rookie of the year. I don't know how that doesn't happen when a team goes from the third pick to the playoffs. I think that for him, equal stats to LeBron that year, one of the real bucket getters in the league, phenomenal footwork, just had it like I was his jerseys was one of the first I wanted to get. You remember the light, the powder blue Nuggets?
With the yellow and
Yes,
in the
yes.
background, yeah,
That
of
was
course.
so tough. But Melo is definitely on that top five. I'm with you on this one. My shooting guard, T-Mac, like it's rare that you can have someone, Melo and T-Mac both apply to this, that can have a truly iconic jersey in multiple organizations. Like T-Mac has the pinstripe magic one. Like to go from Penny Hardaway to then T-Mac kind of just taking that over and embodying that, leading the league in scoring as a 24-year-old, like absolute dog, incredible highlights, like lobs, the off the backboard dunk in the All-Star game, like so epic. Just
Don't forget the purple Raptors jersey.
the purple, like three, like true, 100%. That's a great point. And then at point, I'm going D Rose. Derrick Rose, before injuries, was
Course.
on a trajectory that very few players could ever have imagined. And to me, so a lot of people may not know this. Like Derrick Rose was in my graduating class in high school.
Nice.
And so that is one of the most underrated graduating classes ever. Like Derrick Rose, James Harden, Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, Mike Beasley, Eric Gordon, like killers from top to bottom, right? But there was the when you hear people talk about, and again on other podcasts with professional players, like the Rose flu, that started in high school. That was not at the Bulls. Like this was a guy who was putting both elbows in the rim as a 6'3" point guard.
Nice.
And like no one, it's so funny when you hear him talk about the game now. He's like, I didn't have anyone teaching me how to shoot. I was just out there playing. It was like so phenomenal and so good for the city of Chicago post the Jordan era. Obviously, it was a long time removed, like a decade removed, but just fantastic. That would be my first five. Just really, really players that I love, players that I really rock with growing up.
That's a
What
great five.
about your second five?
All right, kicking off my second five, I have Blake Griffin, and I have beside it dunk version. So
Oh, for sure.
before he got actually good at basketball, and he didn't care about his body, that was possibly the most exciting player I've ever watched play basketball, other than Zion when in high school. And
Right.
yeah, every night you had to tune in. He was, who was he going to dunk on?
How
I mean,
good was Lob City? Like,
incredible. Even
it's.
before he had Chris Paul, it was amazing. And then he gets one
Yes.
of the best passers of all time to throw him in another explosive guy, DeAndre Jordan, just insane lobs.
Man, that was epic stuff. That
It
was
was
epic
crazy.
stuff.
It was crazy. So he was incredible. But next, I would have Ben Wallace. I don't know if I would say he's really one of the more underrated players of all time, but a guy that it will get lost in time, and people will look back and kind of question how was this guy so good. I think he's listed at 6'8". He might be closer to 6'6". Center who was one of the best defensive players to ever play the game.
Division two graduate. Let's just
Yep,
shout that out. Division two graduate, Virginia
absolutely.
Union.
And just it's interesting. He led with a unique level of toughness and, obviously, he had incredible instincts and physicality and athleticism to be able to do what he did on a title level team. And still, I think a guy that should get plenty of respect in history, just not forgotten. My next one, I have Peja Stojakovic. So,
Yes, epic.
going with a little bit more of a shooter angle on that one, ahead of his time, you could argue.
I would say.
A 6'10" guy who can absolutely let it go. Imagine him playing in today's game. He would take 600 threes a season. It would be ridiculous. Maybe that would even be low. Now that I'm saying it out loud, maybe closer to 1,000. But yeah, he was incredible, and he was on some great teams, those Kings teams, even when he was on
Awesome
the
teams,
Hornets and with
epic
Baron
teams, man.
Davis and those guys. So
Yes.
love those teams. And then I would have another Hall of Famer, top 10 player of all time, Shaquille O'Neal. He was one of the first
Great
introductions.
bigs.
Yeah, I have a, I guess, affinity for bigs, I see by
Straight
this
bigs.
list. But yeah, Shaq, just my real introduction to basketball when I was really young. So before Dwayne Wade, before all that, aforementioned stuff, Shaq was just this dominant force, and
Yes.
everything was about the Lakers at that time. When I was first able to, all my memories for when I first became sentient, and so I think it's just interesting to think back about how the game's changed and how somebody like Shaq couldn't maybe play today, but he
It's
was
crazy to
still
think about.
right. But just given the lack of post ups you see on a nightly basis, but perfect for his era, dominant force, he was incredible.
People need to go back and look at his finals stats.
They were
Like
ridiculous.
when they question the greatness of Shaq due to work ethic or whatever, it's like, yeah, he averaged 38 and 16. Like that happened. That is a fact.
Right.
Like
And I've read a lot, like several of his books, I think three, and he refers to always being, I made them when they counted, talking about free throws. So,
yep.
and the numbers do back that up in the critical moments, in the critical games, he would lock in, and he was able to do that. So for my last name on here, I don't have one, but I have five names because I
Oh,
couldn't decide. So
pick one.
I have six actually, but it's tough because, Kevin Durant, one of the best scorers of all time. Steph Curry always got to tune in, but I'll go with Amar'e Stoudemire just to give another throwback reference, and a guy who was extremely fun, the 7 seconds or less Suns.
Picked a team of two centers, two power forwards, and who was the middle person? Who was the third in that group?
Blake Griffin, Ben Wallace, Peja, Shaq, and then like I said, I could go a lot of different directions with this last one, but I just chose to go with Amar'e. I also had Deron Williams on here, so, and Tim Duncan, so that'll cap out my list. But I think that'll there's some other guys. If we
Nice.
went deeper and did role players, I think I'd come up with some really sicko names for you.
That would be a good like subtopic. Like maybe we come back to a professional type of deal in the near future and we make that happen. Let me
Not
give
all
you
stars and Hall of Famer, right?
exactly. Yes. The all random team. Like we could really throw out some star names there, but here's my five, the second five that I would have picked. Jokic. Like of all the players in the modern era, I really do believe that he would transcend eras in a way that people don't give him enough credit for. Passing is ridiculous. He's always a step ahead. His shooting percentage is just through the roof. And he's more excited about his horse winning a race than he is about basketball. So, I mean, phenomenal guy. Next for power forward, I'm going Tim Duncan. So,
Nice.
quite the contrast between KG and Tim Duncan in my first and second fives. But man, like talk about the fundamental extraordinaire, five rings. He's the greatest power forward ever. That data supports that. So I think that for him, he's just tremendous. And seeing the Spurs dynasty, that's like the first dynasty you see when you think about my era growing up, is like you knew the Spurs were the ones. So that was cool. KD is the small forward. There's no better scorer in the history of the game. I will go to bat saying that. If you look at how tall KD is, he's not 6'9".
No,
Like
you saw
there's
the video of him beside Joel Embiid.
Yes, like
He's just towering over
he's
Jason Tatum.
maybe he's it, he's definitely taller than Anthony Davis. Like he's probably closer to 6'11" or maybe 7 foot, and he's one of the greatest shooters from any position on the
Scores.
court ever. And this is not someone who's going to take seven, eight dribbles to break you down. Like, give me a pin down, let me get to the mid post. If he's elbow to elbow, it's toast. I mean, it's just he's the best scorer of all time. So impressive and just critic. Like, he has some pretty epic jerseys as well and some epic numbers. The
Yeah.
Sonics, underrated.
Yeah, that one's pretty sick.
I like the Brooklyn Seven.
The Sonics are gonna come back.
We'll see. That's a topic for another day. Shooting guard, I'm going Kobe. Like, I think probably the most skilled player argument is really valid. And the reason I say that is because when you listen to interviews with him, like you can see him play and you can see his athleticism, and people can talk about how MJ had this vertical and Kobe didn't, and LeBron could do this and Kobe didn't, and this, that, and the third. The reality is, when you hear him talk about his development and his skill, like, I can do any move, but if I get to the nail, it's over for you.
Wraps.
I can do between behind to the nail. I can do one dribble left, one dribble right to the nail. I could do jab step, pump fake, spin to the nail. It doesn't matter. If I'm at that spot, you're dead. And he would always get to those spots. Mamba mentality, so phenomenal. Love seeing him with the 08 Olympic team and the 2012 Olympic teams. Like, just incredible, incredible stuff. And then my last one is pretty hilarious. So I was actually growing up in Washington, D.C., amidst the rise of Gilbert Arenas. That's where I finished high school at the same time that he became Agent Zero and became Hibachi. So for me, like, I've been to Wizards games and seen it live, and it's unbelievable. Like, the stuff that he was able to do, his control of the game, his shooting. I think that he is a player similar to T-Mac, similar to, others, just before his time. I mean, I think that his position right now is a scoring lead guard. Can you imagine with the NBA spacing right now what Gilbert Arenas would do? He'd
Another guy, he would
automatically,
take 1,000 threes.
he'd take 1,000 of them, and he would easily average, I think, 35. Like, he is well on his way to doing that consistently. But unfortunately, a lot of my guys' careers were derailed by injuries. Regardless, I rock out with them, and I rock out with those 10. For people who are going to watch this, I would love to see some comments about whose team you think would win.
Oh, wow.
Like,
Mine's not a team.
well,
I didn't follow
you
the. I didn't
can, I'll be
follow the rules.
honest with you. I'm so confident in the two deep I created that I don't think there's any two deep you could create that would even match that. The only one I would be worried about, and hear me out on this, if you went with a front court, Yao, okay, power forward, who do you think I'm going to say?
Shaq.
Correct. Small forward, Jokic.
Yikes. Point guard Jokic.
Point guard, Jokic, shooting guard, KD. And then throw in anyone, throw in Peja, throw in, that would be your only
We'll
chance.
throw in Peja for a spacer.
This is this because my teams are like well-constructed rosters.
Yeah. I like I said, I didn't follow the rules, so.
Fantastic. Another example of what makes Buckets and Banter such a special podcast.
Hey,
All
listen,
right, let's get
those
into
favorite
the
players, those favorite
that's that is
players.
true. I did say favorite players, not your favorite lineup. Let's get into the next topic. So, trending topic for the day. It's been a lot of discussions about this. We've seen some stuff on other podcasts with Paul George. Hartenstein was on there recently to shed some light on the difference between the American developmental system and the European developmental system when it comes to amateur basketball. I personally have some pretty, like, I just have some thoughts I don't know can change about the way that basketball looks for American athletics. But can you kind of explain and shed some light on the disparities between the two, whether it's the American model or the European model?
Yeah, so I think there's a few points that are really interesting to me about this whole idea of how could we potentially implement the European model, potentially do these academies and so on and so forth. The issue ultimately starts with the top. The
Right.
NBA hasn't invested the resources into doing something like Real Madrid, where they put all the resources into these select kids and build them up through these leagues throughout their childhood, and then eventually can sign them for whatever amount of money, and then they play on the real thing.
Right.
But the whole idea of that has to start with the NBA. Imagine the Orlando Magic having a 15U team or a 12U team or wherever you feel wherever they need to start their development.
Right.
And obviously the problem here is that you have so many kids and so many people that want to change. Obviously we have more people than a lot of these countries. So a lot of these people want to chase this NBA dream and pursue athletics at the highest level. So you have a lot more people that would be susceptible to maybe getting caught in a situation where they don't pan out, or they've gotten involved too early, or it's not enough education focused, or what have you. So I think there's pros and cons to each. I think obviously America would struggle given the current A travel ball structure and AAU amateur athletics and just the nature of things here in general. But the way they teach the game overseas tends to be also, I think, something that is adapted to the game here. I think the game here has kind of become more of space and passing and shooting, which is what they've always taught over there. And now you just have more players that we see be coming over because that's just more of a accessible thing. So I think that's a big part of it because, you know, the change in game, the way that the game's evolved allows for a lot of these players to come over because of their skill set. I mean, think about someone like Tony Kukoc. He would have been amazing in a day's game, even as good as he was back then. So we've named out several guys, Peja, a guy like that, he would have been greater in today's game. So just that's, I think that's a big thing for it. And that's one of the bigger obstacles.
For me, what I found so fascinating about that interview was I did not know that there were no high school teams in Europe. I did not know that there were no college teams in Europe. I didn't know that that wasn't a thing. And I guess like that's just me being naive. That it was all through the club team. But what that does to me is it tells me two things. For one, their process is very selective. They're not taking kids who don't have talent. They're not taking kids who don't have potential. There's a reason that a kid is in one of those clubs from a very young age. Really, it's three takeaways. The second is a lot of those kids are playing up. And that is something that to me has become a lost art within the way that we approach things in the United States. This lack of desire to have kids struggle or battle or scrap or claw to get where they need to be, to truly get their butts kicked so they have to reflect on their areas of improvement and also finding ways to fit in within the team structure. I think that that's very important. I've had to reflect on that a lot with Trey and his journey with soccer. Is, he is his next season is going to be fall soccer. And we decided to put him in 8U as a 6-year-old. And, Trey is probably the same size as most 8-year-olds, but there are going to be a ton of different struggles that he goes through with physicality, with skill, with everything. So it's a decision that's tough for parents. So I think that that's another big part of it. And then the last one's basic, man. It's just money. Like, we're not going to stop the structure that exists in the United States because everything is money related. It is what it is. Like, there's nothing in AAU right now that isn't about money. The number of teams is insane. It doesn't lend itself to development. You can just start a team and call yourself elite. That already sends the wrong message. But you can't call yourself the average team because then no one's going to want to play for you. And then the other part of it is within college, there's no way that will change. Zero. Like the NCAA being a multi-billion dollar industry is not suddenly going to stop at the expense of development for the game of basketball. It's just not. So it's unfortunate, but to me, I think that those are kind of the disparities that I found very, very interesting. I'd love to hear your perspective on, can you imagine though, like if we committed to that model with our top dogs, like how unbelievably dominant they would be? Like I don't think there would be any chance for anybody else. Like if that's truly the route that we committed to, what are your thoughts on that?
I tend to agree, but I think that the players who are, I wouldn't say surefire things because there's not such a thing, but you know, EJ Dibansa, he was continually putting himself in a position to, I'm going to make it to the NBA and I'm going to be good.
No, that's
So
a fact.
I think a lot of these highest level players do that, but I think the fact that it's almost a revolving door every 3 to 5 years, 10 years even, of where these coaches are and what programs are relevant and what programs aren't. I mean, I haven't heard about Shadow Mountain in
That's a great
years.
reference. That's a great reference.
Chino Hills was obviously because of the Vol brothers, but you think like Montverde now, they're changing, and Kevin's going to Spire. So I think it's hard to keep a consistent structure with so much movement. That's one of my bigger concerns with it. But I do think that a lot of these top players are training with NBA guys and are getting some sort of development with NBA players. So the issue comes really into play is, how do we get these guys that are the top surefire things into an NBA system earlier? Because we don't do this with any sport, but
Correct.
due to your college athletics and the money that's involved with that in high school athletics, but you can get drafted, out of high school for baseball, I'm pretty sure. So it's like, I really think that's something that needs to come back. I understand the concerns with not allowing people to go to college and then missing out on if they do end up getting hurt or some unforeseen thing, they don't pan out or what have you, then they can't go back and do things as easily or have the opportunities that they may have had if they just went to college. But I do think it's just something for, why does AJ Dvanstead need to go to BYU? Now he's going to go make a ton of money. So what does it matter? Like, he's going to go and it's just going to be kind of a rehearsal year and go through the motions and see what kind of crazy numbers you can put up so he can be the number one pick.
There's so much to me. I think that all those points are great. I think that we're trying to almost do it in a self-serving way to just say that we did it the way that we have always done it, without real reflection. Here's some stuff that I think really proves. I just think there's too much fluff, in the game right now. Whether it's lack of truth from coaches, whether it's too many teams. I was doing some research today for this. So listen to this. There are 15 EYBL Scholastic teams. Why? What benefit is that? Like, so you what you've done within that, because remember 20 years ago it was like Oak Hill was the one and they got whoever they wanted to get and they would go everywhere and they would destroy everyone. And the EYBL teams, that's not a knock to just them. That doesn't include a prolific prep. That doesn't include dynamic prep. That doesn't include anyone in the WCAC in Washington, D.C. That doesn't include the great California teams. That doesn't include great teams from the American Southeast. It doesn't, like, there's too much. Like, everyone is trying to go after the same kids, and as a result, there's no solid product. I said this the other day when I was at the Phenom event, coaching the 16 and under Team Loaded South team. People forget that 18 years ago, 20 years ago, when I graduated from high school in Washington, D.C., D.C. Assault had a starting five of the following. Okay. Chris Wright went to Georgetown, top 50 player in the class. Austin Freeman went to Georgetown, top 50 player in the class. Nolan Smith, McDonald's All-American, went to Duke, is now the head coach of Tennessee State. Michael Beasley, number one or two overall player in his class on every major publication. And Chris Braswell, who was in the class of 2008, not 2007, top 50 player in his class, went to Georgetown. In what universe right now would five top 50 players play together in AAU basketball?
It might happen, but that would not be serious. That's the issue.
Then you're talking about like, oh, well, it's a showcase thing or it's this game. We're going to pair. No. Think about the benefit. Because when Chris Wright and Austin Freeman went to Georgetown, they were killers. They were ready to go. They knew what role they needed to play to win. You already knew Mike Beasley was the top dog on that team. He knew that was going to be his role from high school all the way through his 1 year in college. You knew what Nolan Smith was going to like. There's a missing element of that, and it's because there's just too many options, man. It's watered down, And I don't know that it'll ever catch that system because I don't think Europe is going to deviate from what they're doing. I don't know.
Well, I'll take a counterpoint and kind of look at a contrasting view and say, is our system really that flawed? We still do occupy over 75% of the NBA, which the number has increased from 5% in, 30 years ago. That said, that kind of goes into the next point. Maybe that's just improvements in scouting, accessibility and technology and being able to scout players from afar and,
Sure.
players that
Player, yep.
wouldn't have been seen otherwise. So I think that kind of also leads into the international side of things. You see more players kind of being unearthed that wouldn't have been seen otherwise just because of pure accessibility, which has greatly improved in the last 20 to 30 years, as with the numbers of international players that you see going into the NBA. So I just think, like I said, it's favoring them now, especially because the game is trended towards what they're good at. And then the system that we have, it's maybe unhealthy, but it still does produce an overabundance of talent. So much so that we have, now that after the COVID, we see the whole age thing and the transfer portal and NIL has
Right.
now pushed kids pretty much down a level. We see a lot of kids who would have gone Division One a year ago,
Sure.
going D2 and D3 just because it's just so much more competitive out there. Think about how many kids are talented enough to play in college and then can't play in college.
No,
That's
sure.
more common now than it was 5, 10 years ago when I first kind of entered the landscape, in 2016.
No, I want to ask a question, but I don't want you to get in trouble within your role. The question is, do you think the quality of basketball within the time that you've been in this space has improved?
I think it's no. I think the easy answer is no because there's more. There's just so much more. I think
That was my point. Yes.
it's at every level. I think you see, I've written about it before. You have the implementation of these secondary circuits, which regardless of we still have, great events with great teams and everything that Phenom does is fantastic. But the reality is the teams on these secondary circuits that didn't exist before would have been coming to these events that were more for independent teams because they would have been independent. And you see all these talented players that are playing on these secondary circuits, which UA Rise, Adidas, and the EYCL, they're great, but they're now in a position where it's still competitive, but it's is it competitive to a point where it's changed recruitment or are these coaches really
Sure.
just not out as much? Because I felt like in these live periods you saw a lot of coaches that wanted and needed to see these players, but that weren't seeing these players on the circuit because they're not prioritizing secondary circuits as much at these areas.
I think for me, what I have come to terms with, which is kind of a sad reality, is as money is involved, there is not going to be a change in the route. And instead, it makes me reflect on a coach as to how I'm teaching what needs to be taught for kids to be successful and the way that I'm advocating for kids. Because there's nothing that's going to change unless it's from the absolute top, to your point. Too much money is involved at this point. So let's get into the final part. So, sound off. I'm going to let you kind of start with yours. I'm really excited about mine, but I went first last time. So, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, I think this kind of actually ties in a little bit with what we've been talking about, just how hard it is to make it. I think that there's such a heavy pressure on these kids, especially so early, that you have to become something or you have to reach certain milestones and accolades and achievements to be worthy. And
Right.
ultimately, it's just kind of the run your own race thing, that we've mentioned several times. Understanding the odds. Again, like my last sound off, don't want to sound cliche or corny, but the odds are just so low. And ultimately, even playing in college is such a rarity. There are more players playing right now than And there are scholarships. That's just
That's
a
a
fact.
fact.
So, I mean, that's not even the, but understanding oneself, understanding your limitations. If you're a 5'5" center, your likelihood of being in the NBA is just low. So, just kind of
It's
being
zero.
self. Yeah. Well,
He can't say that because of his role, but it's zero.
yeah,
It is zero.
it's, but I'm maybe in sixth grade, we'll say. So,
Sure.
but no, the ultimately it's just so hard to make it, and understanding the process too for those that are high level players, that's so key. I think you find that the players that really make it at any level, especially the highest level, are the ones that have the work ethic that separate themselves. Obviously,
Absolutely.
the NBA is littered with talented dudes who don't work, but there it's the guys who are at the highest level of success treated as such. So they move accordingly, and they kind of both in terms of diet, their body, and how they develop their game. So I think that all that kind of goes into just knowing the odds and the
Right.
process and everything that goes into it. So that would be my sound off.
It's funny that that was yours, because mine is like, it makes me think of like the good cop, bad cop type of deal. Yours, I think, was about being very realistic. So I'm reading a book right now, written by Kevin Eastman. For those of you who don't know who that is, it's a long time coach in the basketball space, was an assistant coach on the 2008 Boston Celtics, who won an NBA title. Has been a collegiate head coach, has been a collegiate assistant coach. And in his book, Why the Best Are the Best, he has a whole introductory section on the value of the word try. Just try. Like, if you're nervous about doing something, try. And so the reason that I think that that's funny, obviously, because of what you just said, is there is this level of realism. But what I'm assuming Jeff is also not saying, as a member of his in this space, is like, it don't give up on what your dream is, but be realistic about, one, what it is, and two, how hard you're working. If you're not working hard enough for it, then there's really no purpose. But back to my point about try. It made me think a lot about this podcast. It made me think a lot about different things, and having new expectations and new experiences. Within just using this podcast as an example, right? There's a level of vulnerability that exists because you're putting yourself out there, and what you say is what you say. We can't go back and edit stuff well. The only edits that we've really made are when my internet cut off randomly. Outside of that, it's not been a ton. So for me, the value in it is like, whether it's you as a player, whether it's a new profession, it's a class that you're struggling with, whatever the case may be. I think my sound off would just be on just try. There's value in showing up every day and doing the work. It's impossible to do that if you're not trying to be your best at it. So you will fail, you will struggle, you will have, certain things that don't go your way, but the value of just the word try, I think, is very real. And for all people who are listeners, whether it be a player, whether it be a coach, whatever the case may be, just try. That would be my message for the day.
Nice.
Cool. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning into the second episode of Buckets and Banter. We appreciate you guys more than you know. We hope that you like this episode. And, in the near future, just so you guys are aware, I'm sure that we'll have potentially some guests to hear some new perspectives on. I know that that's something that Jeff and I have discussed. But, we don't know yet. It may be episode 3, it may be episode 15. We have no clue what the future will hold, but we're definitely going to keep showing up and keep enjoying.
Last thing, we also will be dropping new rankings at the end of the month, so just a little heads up for people that care about that.
New rankings for.
Phenom Hoops.
Oh, very nice. That will be. No, that's going to be really excellent. And I. We'll have some things to discuss in that regard. 100%. I can already tell. Thank you guys so much for your support, and we hope that you listen.